Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Next Gen Outdoorsman podcast. We are talking about Montana and how to get to Montana and my experience in Montana, where my brother and I shot our first mule deer bucks, spent my dad's 50th birthday in Montana, and my uncle and his buddy went with us, and they had doe tags, but they had a great time, and we're definitely going to go back. It's one of those states where you get there and you wish you had been doing this for 10 years prior. So you guys have the want to go. I'm going to teach you guys how to get there and what to expect and give you some of the resources, what to look at and what to expect when you are applying to for a general tag in Montana, because you do have to apply for the general tag. But before we get rolling on all that cool hunting stuff and talking about Montana, we've got the official first beer review of Next Gen. Okay, what do you think of the presentation?
The presentation? Do we even know what it is?
We just got to give them a little bit of foreplay.
Okay.
We got to talk about presentation and then we'll review
Presentation's very American.
That's exactly how I was going to explain it. And I think that's exactly how it was explained.
I feel like I should be riding a horse as I crack this.
You should. Do you have a shirt on?
Do I have a shirt on?
Yeah, when you're riding your horse drinking this one.
No.
No, absolutely not. Okay. That's good to know. But as far as, I asked you guys for recommendations and I got one. It says it's an American classic. Do you agree with that?
I mean, yeah, definitely.
This comes from Trigga Trey Trey. Appreciate it, Trigga Trey. You are a local boy and you listened to our first podcast, so huge. Now, let's crack this. Let's hear the crack. What do we think? Ooh, that's money. It's got good carbonation, I'll tell you that much. You're rubbing your mic. Mm-hmm. I know there's a little downtime here, but it says America's best since
1893.
1844. Mine says 93.
It says established in Milwaukee, 1844.
Selected as America's best.
Took
in 1893.
That took him a long time.
Took him a while to get selected the best.
See, I'm just not a fan.
I don't think it's bad.
It's not bad, okay? So, but the only thing is that I'm buying this at a bar at
99 cents.
1 in the morning for $1.
That's exactly right. We're talking about Pabst. Is it Pabst or Pabst?
Whatever you want to say.
Blue Ribbon.
You say it fast enough, it doesn't matter.
PBR, okay? For me, it's got a little of like an IPA taste to it.
Call it IPA.
No, the hop. I don't even know how to explain it. We're not beer connoisseurs, but this is.
What do you mean we're not beer connoisseurs?
Well, we drink a lot of Busch Light. I mean, I guess is that a qualification?
Absolutely.
Okay. Here, let's try it again.
I just think it's got a.
It's got that bitter taste, like a fucking IPA. Nah,
it's got like a nutty aftertaste.
Why do you know what nuts taste like?
I don't know. Peanuts, like. I don't know. It just smells like a hangover.
That's a good way to explain it. I'm not throwing this one out the window. If I had to drink it, I'd drink it for sure.
Out of 10.
Out of 10. What is 10, though? Are you putting a Busch Light as a 10?
Or no,
are
we talking about... No. It's a Busch Light, we just drink it a lot.
Okay.
Because one is cheap. Two, it tastes good.
Okay, name a number 10 right now. First one that comes to your mind right now.
A 10? That's hard because that's a perfect beer.
That you drink? But it's got to be one you got to be able to drink a lot. You're not going to like mine.
So, we got to define the stipulations, but whatever. I'm just going to rank this.
Okay, let's lay it out.
I'm just going to get right to it. 6.3.
This is a 6.3. This is a 99 cent bar beer.
This is a bar beer.
6.3.
I'm buying this at the bar, and I'm going to enjoy it at the bar because it was 99 cents.
I feel like you're ranking it high.
I probably am. If you look at it as a grade scale, it's a D-.
But that doesn't equate to a 6.3 out of a 10 scale. That's like a 3.4.
You're going to make me go back on my
If you're good with 6.4, man, have at it.
I said 3, but whatever.
But now you're going to have a hard time getting above that. Like, you don't have, like, your measure of scale from a 6.3 to a 10. It's going to be, there's a lot of beers in there. So we're going to have to be pretty accurate detailed. Like, what, we got a Busch Light at like a 7.24? Like, is that
that's how good, that would be a good one.
Is that, like, how accurate we have to be?
It's figure skating rankings, so yeah.
We also have to figure out what we're scoring these beers on.
I don't know if you've seen
Blades of Fury, or is that what it is, or Balls of Fire?
Okay, we're going to stop talking.
Okay.
But the pizza review guy.
Oh, yeah. El Presidente.
Yeah, Barstool. It's like that. It's figure skating.
Okay.
That's how he just does rankings.
I gotcha. Okay.
I
like the presentation.
I'm hanging on to a 6.3.
Okay. What? Okay. Is it wearing on you? Are you drunk already?
I'm getting there, but I'm hanging on to that because I think it's a good beer. It just,
you talked so much shit before the podcast.
I know I did. There's a little bit of a weird, now that I'm tasting it, there's a little bit of a weird aftertaste.
It's that IPA taste, right? Like, think of like a space dust.
It's like a bitter, but this isn't like bitter.
Taste it again. It's definitely got a bitter taste to it.
You know what it tastes like?
What's it taste like?
An Rainier. I would compare it to a Rainier.
It's bitter for me. It's like a light version of an IPA.
No, say what you want. It's got the lager taste.
What do we got for a percentage here? We should probably do some homework on this before. But I'm sure we're boring you guys to death. I hope you guys are getting a good laugh out of this. I'm leaving it in. I'm not cutting this, just so you know. You're going to have to deal with this.
Okay, now we're going to go back to the lattes.
Okay, you finish that one. We're going to go back to lattes. But thanks for the recommendation. If you guys have any others out there, feel free. Otherwise, we're going to have to go to a default Busch Latte for the podcast. But like I said, today we are talking... Oh, Union Made as well. That's a bonus tenth of a point.
No.
You're in the Union.
I don't care.
I'm in the Union. It's a Union, okay?
You're in a coalition.
No, I'm in Pipe Fitters. Local 32, brother.
Is that what your boss said?
Yeah, it's a coalition of, like, we're in, like, with Game Wardens.
Oh, okay.
Pipe Fitters, all that stuff. It's a coalition of unions for power. Anyways.
I broke the seal, by the way, so.
And that's not good. Let's get back to talking about hunting in Montana. All right, so we just got done with pee break number one. Booty here broke the seal. Anyways, I have Booty with me today, and your job here today is ask questions. When I need to clarify something, or you, because you've never been to Montana, you don't even know how to apply to Montana, other than the stuff we've talked about, but your job today is to be the listener's advocate that they don't know the process, they want to learn, and they want clarification. So you're here on behalf of them.
Okay, that sounds good.
So you're just, I mean, if you don't say a word for the whole time, that's fine, but I need you to ask the questions when I'm not making sense and ask questions of like, well, how does this work or how does that work? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's why I have Booty here today. Give Booty some love. What's your Instagram handle?
Elam_13.
How do you spell Elam?
It's E as in Edward, L as in Lima, A as in Adam, M as in Mike, _13.
Okay. Pretty simple. We didn't get too creative with it.
No.
Kept it to the basics.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, so getting into Montana, and I'm going to talk about my experience in Montana. I did harvest mule deer. We were successful. My brother harvested a buck, and my dad shot a deer. My uncle shot a deer. His buddy shot a deer. It was a phenomenal time. Like I had said before, it is one of those states where once you go, it's one of those where you wish you've gone for many years. And it's one hunt that I hope that I never miss every November, because that's when we were there. So when we made the idea, I was like, I want to go shoot a mule deer. I want to go to Montana, because you hear about how crazy it is rutting bucks. It's one of the only Western states that you can hunt over the counter. Well, it's not technically over the counter, but you have to draw for the general tag. But a general tag that you're hunting rutting mule deer. Most of them do not go into November. And if they do, I know Colorado has some late seasons, but I'm not really versed in it. But I think it's pretty hard to draw one of those late season tags. But on a general Montana tag, you can hunt into November and hunt rutting bucks.
So blacktails ruts right around the end of October. When's a mule deer rut?
Mule deer rut, it's kind of similar to blacktail because blacktail gets started. I'm going to say blacktail are very regionally specific on the does because my does that I hunt are like November 15, 16, 18, 19. Like I shot the biggest buck that I've shot as far as blacktails go, November 19th. So that doe is hot at that time. I'd say mule deer about the same because when we were there, let's start with time frames. We decided Veterans Day was on November 11th, which is a Wednesday. We're going to start our leave after November 11th. So we left on Wednesday. We left at like 7 o'clock at night and drove all night through the night and got to our hunting spot at like 3 the next day.
That sucks.
It wasn't fun. But we took shifts. We had three people, so... You know, I think it was 15-hour drive. Everybody drives 5 hours, sleeps, rotates. We were also so jacked that nobody slept until like 6 o'clock the next morning. So we went from the 11th. We had it scheduled from like the 11th through the 22nd. So we only had to take 2 days off that week and then 7 days or 5 days the other week. So I took 7 days off of work to go hunt deer in Montana. Now, I think that at looking back, it was a little much. But it was nice to be able to have all of that. We cut our season short. Chase shot his buck, and then we headed home the next day so we could come hunt blacktails, and I ended up shooting a blacktail on that Sunday, which was the last day of late buck. Mm-hmm. So it worked out, but we had the opportunity to stay longer and hunt another, like, 5 days. We only hunted – we left it on a Tuesday, I believe, or a Wednesday, so we were there for a week. So – it was a good time frame because we were able to see the progression of the bigger bucks come into rut. And I would say right around that 15th part, all of the guys that have been going for a long time showed up. Like when we got there on the 12th, hardly anybody. After the 15th, people were piling in, camper after camper and tent after tent. Like people know that later November, it's go time.
Mm-hmm.
So... we had the idea. We got in. We drew. Chase and I drew as a party for a deer combo. We put in for a deer combo only. Then my dad was like, I want to go. So he had some doe tags. My uncle was like, I want to go. He bought some doe tags. They were just going for the experience, and it was a fun time. And so we like I said, we left at 7 o'clock at night on the 10th, and we got to our spot Wednesday the 11th about 3 a.m. It was... it was a grind, but basically what we did on Wednesday was get it. We stayed in a hotel and it was really not terrible. I mean, it was like $600 for the whole trip. And so we split it. It ended up being $200 a person for the whole week or 9 days or something like that. So I mean, phenomenally priced, but it was an hour or so away from where we're hunting. So that was the only downfall. And so we get over there, it's 3 o'clock, we got checked into our room, we got our bags in, we got changed, and we hit a couple spots out really close to the hotel, didn't ever end up seeing anything, and I was kind of like, okay, we're in Montana, this is kind of cool, you know, I've seen some deer tracks in the snow, but we haven't seen anything. It's like not chalked up to what everybody's like, oh, you're going to see deer everywhere, there's going to be bucks all over, X, Y, and Z. Okay, so we go back and we sleep at the hotel. You know, there's a local bar right across the street. So we go to the bar and grab some food, have a good time. Waiter was nice, have a couple of drinks. And now it's day one, first full day of us hunting in Montana, and I was jacked. Now, I had planned on going to a certain area. I did have some help from a good buddy. He gave me a general vicinity. But at the end of the day, once we got boots in the field, we never really hunted that area too much. There was a lot of main roads in there, and he must know it a lot better than I do. But we kind of stayed away from there because that was where the general public would go. We had a lot of Montana guys and a lot of Washington dudes show up. Like I saw more Washington guys than Montana dudes over there. But first day, we picked a spot. I'm like, let's go check this out. Let's hit this cat road and let's go. Come to find out, my dad's four-wheel drive was not working.
Nice. Yeah. It's a good time to find out.
Really good time. We just drove 16 hours. We're 1,000 miles away from home, X, Y, and Z. That's really fun. So we're within eye distance, you know, within sight distance of where I wanted to go. We had seen a couple deer, but it was a sheet of ice. And two-wheel drive, we were just, the ass end of the truck was walking back and forth trying to go up this hill. And it was pretty steep on each side. And my brother and dad were getting all stressed out. And I was like, all right, look, let's grab our guns. Let's get our packs. Let's get everything taken out of the truck. Let's get you turned around. You go back to town. You know how to get back to town. Go back to town. Get your truck fixed. Let's get this all taken care of. Because honestly, we're not going to be able to do anything if you don't have four-wheel drive. And this stuff gets wet, you know, up here, or we have a bunch of snow. We're going to be kind of screwed. My uncle at this point was checking out a different area because we kind of split up to divide and conquer. So get my dad turned around, and he's heading back to town. My dad turned around, actually, I found a shed later on the week, like 50 yards off the road up the hill. Kind of cool. I still have that shed. It's Dallas's shed. So I'd like to get Dallas and tell him something when I'm out of state. But Chase and I hike up the hill. We see like 9 deer as soon as we hike up the hill, right off the road, little forkhorn buck. Chase gets all excited. I'm like, no. And granted, Chase had told me, he's like, I'm going to shoot a bigger buck than you. I'm going to hold out to the last day. And he's all jacked because he usually shoots the first legal buck that he sees. And there's nothing wrong with that. But we're in Montana. It's a little bit of a brotherly competition. And that's what he was going in with. So day one, we get up, we hike another probably 150 yards up to the top of the ridge, find our old abandoned road, hit the abandoned road, find a good glassing spot, because from the old, like, old guys say, sit and glass. Like, you're going to kill a deer, mule deer, if you sit and glass. So we picked a knob, and we're glassing up into this basin. It's about 1,000 yards up and to the right of us, and there's like a half moon shape of timber, and it's got little ridges that come off each side. So we're looking all the way up in this timbered area, and I spot 3 bucks messing around in the timber up there. All together, we pull out the spotting scope, put the phone scope on, and we can see them. I've got some video. I'm like, okay, those are definitely worth checking out. So we head up the ridge, see a couple deer on the right, no bucks, probably 15 or 20 does off to the right. We busted 2 other does that were probably going to them. And so we made a game plan to go up and get closer to those timbered bucks to see if we can find them bedded and get a shot maybe if they're good enough. We get up there, can't pick up the bucks. We sit there probably 45 minutes to an hour, can't pick up anything. So I decided, let's go hop up on the other side because, like, we're in a basin, nice basin. There's a big, like, little mini mountain right in the middle of this basin that gives you a good 360-degree view. So we snuck up, got on top of that, and it's timbered so we can have a little bit of cover so we can look at all of these little nooks and crannies where these deer were. Can't find anything in there. And so we go climb up out of the basin, probably 2 ridges away from the road, and we get up and look over the edge, and next thing I know, Chase is on his belly. Deer. And he's like, good buck. And I'm like, all right. And boom, day one, Chase is slinging lead. We had busted 2 bucks. One was a really nice wide buck. And then there was a smaller forkhorn. Boom, shoots again. Chase is slinging lead. Deer go out to about 500 yards and stop. I'm on the deer. And I'm like, Chase, do you want me to shoot him? He's like, no, let me get him. And Chase never gets a shot off again. And he missed both times. Deer was 100% fine. I looked at him in my scope, and there was no blood. There was snow on the ground. There was no blood. He wasn't limping. He had made 2 clean misses, which was the best part. But kind of gave him a little bit of stuff. I said, I thought you were going to hold out. A little bit of buck fever got a hold of Chase and shook him a little bit. So we had just blew up that canyon. And at that point, I took the time to, because we hadn't been able to shoot our guns, we'd arranged a really nice rock at 516 yards. I dialed my scope. I don't have a custom turret. I don't have a fancy scope. I just know my ballistics with my bullets and turned to the MOA. It was so many MOA. So on my scope, a quarter inch is or 1 click is a quarter inch at 100 yards. So I dialed the appropriate MOA, and I said, all right, I'm going to shoot at 500. Shot at 500. My gun was good. Chase's gun was a little bit left, so we adjusted that. He was at 200 yards. We adjusted to dial his gun back in at 200 yards. And Got everything dialed. I definitely recommend shooting your gun when you go out of state. I did have a big mishap in Idaho where I did not check my gun, and I missed a great buck because of it. So,
are you saying when you get in the state?
When you get in the state and where you're going to hunt.
After the travel.
Yeah, check your gun for sure. Because we were a little bit higher elevation than what we're used to here on the coast. So that affects bullet travel a little bit differently. The air's thinner, so you're going to have less drop. So you're going to shoot a little bit high, technically, by the ballistics and the math. So we shot my gun. My gun was good. Chase gun, we need a little bit of adjustment. So we should have honestly done that before, but it was kind of a fiasco with my dad's four-wheel drive going out. And so we worked. We didn't go past that basin where Chase missed that buck. We worked our way back, and we hit another spur that brought us into another basin. I can smell that burp. That was good.
Sorry.
That was good.
Yeah.
So we went into another basin where we got to the spot where we called the buck nest. And we got in there, and we started seeing deer left and right. I think we picked up six different bucks inside of this little basin. And then at the end of the night, I'm pretty sure we'd counted 14 different deer in this basin. So, or 14 different bucks, I should say, in this basin. And one smasher, forklift of a two-point. And I'm sure you guys might have seen that if you follow me on the socials. And that got me, like, I look into the glass, I'm like, holy smokes, that's a big buck. Like, he just cut through my glass. Like, I didn't glass him up, he glassed me up, in a sense. Like, he ran through my glass. I got a little bit of video of him, and then he was gone. So, that's one thing, is there's ability, you're going to spot these deer from a long ways away, and if they're going, it's going to be hard to catch up to them. And then we had glassed a couple other bucks, really nice three-point, and then a really bigger buck, but he was about 800-900 yards, and we had the sun glaring right in our eyes. We just didn't have we didn't have enough time to make a move, and we didn't have the range. So we backed out of there silently, and that's why we called it the buck nest, because there was deer crawling all over. And get back, finally locate with my dad, because he had been in town and we only had spotty service. So we linked back up with him, and so we said, okay, this area is good. We're going to move and go check out some other stuff, because I like to, when we did it in Idaho, where we find a spot, assess it, put it in the piggy bank, let's go check something else out, because there could be a better buck nest, in a sense. Yeah. And so that was day one. We got in there. Chase started slinging lead, like he said he was not going to do. Dad's 4x4 drive went out. We had learned, first time ever getting in the woods, so learned kind of how to get in there. Saw a couple camps. Didn't see anybody outside or off the road. And then got everything squared away. Got home. And the next couple days, we spent learning different areas and access, and you know there's a roads on Onyx that look like they go through, but a lot of times there's a sliver that goes through private. You kind of have to check those out. You can't really guarantee it that it's good to go. A lot of them had no trespassing signs on them, and if it's 1 ounce, like, I don't know, I would not recommend going down there, because you don't want your trip ruined by doing something dumb.
Yeah.
So we played the safe bet, and we didn't go into any of those. So throughout the trip, we're seeing a lot of deer. The one issue we did have was seeing a lot of quality deer. I mean, like, if you wanted to go shoot a, you know, Bass Crack 3-point or a 3x4, you'd have no issues. We were seeing those deer left and right every single day, all over the place. We were looking, for me, my personal goal over there was, I just want to shoot a 4-point. Like I said, I had never shot a 4-point before for blacktail. My goal is a 4-point in Montana, and I wanted to enjoy it. I didn't want to end my trip on day one, to be quite honest with you. I mean, if that Forkhorn gave me a shot, I would have shot him, because he was a stud, man. That would have been no regrets at all shooting that buck. And so we had some other spots to check out. Throughout the week, we kind of checked different spots, and we're learning the area, because that's a lot. What you need to do in out-of-state hunts is see what roads are open, see if there's gates on roads, see the access, see where the other pressure is for hunters. So we were kind of consuming all of this data, you know, talking to people. Talked to a wildland fighter that gave me a really good tip that we can apply for deer and elk. Is he talked about some fires that were in the area, and he says, well, this one was a complete burn. And that one was just a flash burn. I'm like, well, what's the difference between that? And well, he explained that, like, the complete burns that are big, long-lasting, they burn everything, are not the best thing to go into until a couple of years later because they just scorch the earth. They take all the nutrients out of the ground. It's hard for stuff to regrow. But if you get a quick burning, fast burn, then you have a lot of grass undergrow the next year. So in the area we were at, there was one of those. So we're going to definitely check on that in the next time we go over if we get drawn. So let's fast forward to my trip as far as, you know, let's get a successful hunt on the way. I had every night I would go back to the hotel. I'd kind of e-scout a little bit. I would look at where we've been, what the country looks like with my eyeballs, and put two and two together to kind of see where deer would be moving to and or a way to get from away from pressure and to hopefully find some mature deer. And so I had seen this ridgetop that connected from one road system over to another, and you can't easily get to either of these. Well, I should explain, like, you can't just drop somebody off here, drive around, and drop somebody off over here for the proximity of it. It was only 3 or 4 miles, but it took you 2 hours to drive all the way around and go do that. So anybody that was in the middle there was kind of married to going back to one way or the other. And we had two vehicles. So my dad dropped me off and I was going to get picked up by my uncle on the other side. And it was about 4 miles on a ridgetop, tons of basins, tons of good area on each and every side. So we did that. We get up, cross down through the main basin and start coming back up. And now we're starting to pick up bucks left and right. Like, before we could even get down, there's deer in the bottom, and we kind of had to bump them a little bit to keep going because we're kind of married because we're getting picked up 4 miles away over here. We get down, we get up, it's pretty good and steep country, and we see a couple bucks. Chase gets a good look at a nice 3-point. He's like, no, I'm not going to take that buck. And how we ran our ship was, you spot it, you get first right of refusal. That's how it runs. Like, if you glass up the buck and see the buck, if you say no, it goes to the next guy. But at the end of the day, you get the option to shoot first. And didn't want to shoot that buck. And we get up to the top, and we can go left on the rim, just below the rim, or we have to go hike all the way around and kind of meet up. So we went left, and we only have about an hour and a half left of daylight. So we didn't want to take too many detours. We're going to kind of just hit this ridgeline and follow along and creep in each basin and kind of glass and see if we can find anything up. We get out of those deer and we get up onto one of the main ridges and we glass up some hunters. I'm like, no way. And kudos to them. I mean, they were honestly like 20 minutes away from where I live, some local guys, so kind of cool. I glassed up some hunters and I'm like, ah, shoot. And they're in front of us on the ridge. And we're kind of in a hard spot because we have to go over there. Like, mm-hmm. We literally have to go there to get picked up, to get out of here. There's no option for us to go to another basin or another ridge. Like, we kind of got chips are all in on the table. We're hunting this ridge out. And I explained to Chase, I said, hey, look, we kind of have to go this way. So let's go talk to these guys and let's explain, like, hey, where are you going? We kind of have to go this way, you know, make a plan so that we're not looking like assholes. We get halfway to them, deer start flowing in the basin. I don't know if they busted them or they were getting pushed. When we talked to them before, the buck was pushing around, but deer start bailing in the little basin right in front of us, like at 100 yards, about 70, 100 yards. Doe, doe, doe. And I look and I see this buck coming. I'm like, buck, 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 shooter, shooter, shooter. And this is my like worst nightmare of a situation. Because I don't know if those guys are shooting this buck. I don't know if they don't see the buck. I don't know if they see the buck. Like, this is about to turn into a rodeo if it's going to go south. Let's just be honest here. And that was going through my mind as this buck is running in front of me. Buck, 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 buck. I drop down. I pop the bipods out. And I'm on a knee leaning on some rocks. And I'm following this buck. And in my head, I'm like waiting for a gunshot, waiting for a gunshot, waiting for a gunshot, tracking this deer. I'm like waiting for these guys to shoot this deer because that was kind of my thinking. They probably saw it, let them shoot it. And as soon as his buck just about disappears, I touch it off and roll the buck. He's dead right there. Rolled him. And I was like, oh, okay. Awesome. But like, I don't know what's about to happen. And I turned to Chase and I said, I don't know if those guys were looking at it, so we need to go talk to them. And so before, I was on the deer and I stayed on them because I've had bad experiences with, or a bad experience where a really nice buck got up and I don't know what happened, but he lived and he got away from me. So I was on this deer, just dead laying there, and I sat on him for another 30, 40 seconds. I mean, I've seen videos on YouTube where guys will hit him just a smidge high in the backstrap area where they don't break the spine, but the hit, there's enough shock there that it'll drop a deer and the deer hops back up, you know, 30 seconds later, runs off fine. Mm-hmm. So I was on it, and then I come off the bipod. I'm like, high five, rock on, let's go. And I look up, and the guys are already to us. And he's like, you get that buck? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I got him. He's like, right on, man, good job. And I was like, and then I like, okay, well, good job. But so they're like, yeah, we saw him. You know, he has really good fronts, but not really good backs for us. And then they showed us a picture of a buck they shot the day before, and it was a Waruzer. So understandable. He's like, I almost shot it, but he said, we watched that buck for 25 minutes.
Huh.
Because he was supposedly rutting down in the basin right there and then came up the ridge, left the ridge in the timber, and then came back out of the timber, back into the bowl. That's when we saw him. He says, yeah. He's like, awesome. And I was like, yeah, it's my first mule deer. I said, I'm super happy. You know, first I was looking for a 4-point. He's like, oh, right on, guys. Cool job. And then they happened to be, you know, really close to us. So kudos to those guys. And so then Chase and I get down, and there's a video of me actually recovering this buck on our YouTube channel, which is just Next Gen Outdoorsman. So go ahead, check that out. Shameless plug. Boom, boom, babe. So we head down there and take a million photos, because really you only get one shot at these trophy shot photos. That's something. Yeah. Like, I look back and I wish we would have taken more of the elk, because I have about 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is what it is. But that's one thing that I recommend is, like, you get, this is your opportunity, man. Make it count. And then look through them. And if you're not happy, just take more.
Well, my standard operating procedure is 1 to 2.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a hang it on your wall, so.
Well, I like to be able to represent the moment.
That's true.
Like, cause sometimes it can be pretty picturesque, or it's a cool moment, and you want to. I mean, you're not going to have a full-bodied stuffed deer with you in there.
Well, that's one thing about those Euros that I like. So you can take that skull off and be like, check this out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
it's one of the best things about them.
Like, if you want to check it out, like, here, check this guy out. Yeah. We're looking at my Montana Muley right now. I think he's about 23 wide.
You know, I can see where they're saying that the backs, but that's a good buck.
Yeah, so his fronts are really good.
Yeah, his fronts are good.
If he had that on his backs.
And I'm only going off of...
Your knowledge,
off of watching videos of muleys. I can see it. But.
And he's got good eye guards.
No, he's good.
I'm happy. I have no regrets.
Yeah, my blacktail puts him to shame. But,
I'm super happy. And so we get my buck down, and now we have 3.5 miles in front of us. It's getting dark. And there's some videos running around of us packing it out. That was one of the coolest parts, was packing that deer out. It sucked. Like, mule deer are big animals. They're about twice the size of the blacktail here. They are huge. And they smell. My buddy from work calls them sage ranch. He's really? An old Montana
game. They smell like sage?
I didn't really get it. I mean, they just got the rutting buck, you know, kind of like a rutting bull, but... I loved it. It was fun. And then we hiked the ridgetop out at the night, and it was gorgeous. Big Sky, Montana is no joke, man. It is absolutely phenomenally gorgeous. So now let's turn the pressure up a little bit on Chase. He had missed a buck day one. We haven't really seen too many shooters. He had passed a couple bucks. My dad and him were getting into arguments, and my uncle. We're coming from Western Washington, where you shoot it
2-pointer better.
Well, even then, you shoot a spike that's that hard. So, my uncle and my dad, they don't have buck tags. They have doe tags, and they are like, "What the heck is wrong with you guys? You're passing up these big old 3-points and all this stuff," and. I'm like, let's just enjoy our trip. You know, we're seeing bucks. We can shoot one of these bucks later. Let's get it. Let's know the area. Let's learn. Let's do all this stuff. Let's have a good time. That was actually the first 4-point buck we saw, like 4x4. We had seen some big 3x4s and stuff that were contenders, but 4x4 with eye guards, I'm notching my tag, no question.
Yeah.
But that was my goal, and I accomplished my goal, and I'm happy with it. Next year, I'll probably shoot the same thing, but
no, that's a shooter.
I would like to. For me, mass is one thing. Like,
see,
if he was like a mass, like heavy mass 2-point, I'm like, I have a 3-quarter choke. no matter what.
See, that's my goal, is to shoot a 4-point.
Yeah, so
I'm going to be passing.
We'll see about that.
No,
that's
going to be a good thing.
Cage chase, but we got my buck out. We met my dad, my uncle, and him at the other side of, you know, 4 miles out, and we had some celebratory beers and had a good time. It was like right on. That's super awesome. Pee break number 2 is concluded. Okay, it's only been like 30 minutes.
I know,
you're like a pregnant woman. So we meet my uncle and we meet my dad back at the trailhead where we were going to originally get picked up from. We had sent a text out, buck down. So it was pretty cool for them to kind of like wait, you know, and see what we had got. And so we celebrated that night and had some beers at the tavern, got my buck all taken care of. And it was time for Chase to get a buck. Like I said, pressure is on little brother now. And we had another day of hunting after that. We had shot 3 does the next day. So it was kind of a doe killing day because you can get a lot of B tags. We'll cover that in a little bit later. And when we get done taking care of all these does, that was fun because it was one of my uncle's friend's first deer. I was able to explain that. We ended up shooting one at 450 yards. I'd set everything up, turned my MOA. 415, I said aim right there and pull the trigger, and aim right there and pull the trigger and hit where it was going. So that's a cool, there's a video of that on the YouTube as well, so check that out. So doe killing day is over now. We had killed does, and it is my dad's birthday, November 16th, 50th birthday, and we're hunting deer in Montana. So that was a really cool day. And there was actually a lot of, like, chase my dad got into it, like, you know how parents kind of get into it with their children.
Really?
They did. Like, we let them go by themselves, and they got into it. And then, so we kind of met everybody back where we got dropped off for my buck. Like, we got dropped off on that spot to, hey, we'll go meet you on that other ridge. We kind of rendezvoused with my uncle and everybody. We parked at the very top. You know, we had some hot dogs. We had a little skillet. Made some food. Kind of relaxed. Happy birthday, Dad. 2 hours. Hour left to hunt and left. And I'm like, all right, well, let's go check out this burn. Let's glass this way. We're going to kind of go to the same way that we shot my buck on, but we're going to detour a little bit and hit it one ridge over. You have to kind of cross. There's a saddle that you can cross through. And this is going to be one thing that I definitely recommend you guys do, is glass and glass and glass and glass, because we started out on this old Clat Road or BLM Road, Fire Road. I'm not sure what it was. And I was looking at this basin about 800, 900 yards away. And I'm like, that looks deery. Looks good. And so I would go hike about 50 yards, glass. Hike about 50 yards, glass. Hike about 50. I did this 5 or 6 times. On the 6th time, we were about to crest the ridge to go into a next basin. I'm like, let me just check it one more time. Pull my glass up, looking. Oh, shit. There's deer. 2 deer, 3 deer, 4 deer, 5 deer. They're just party trained. Coming into this little bowl right here. And next thing you know, there's a buck sniffing a doe across the open in this basin. I'm like, oh, Chase, there's a buck. Had the spotter, had the phone scope up. And I said, all right. I hit play, recording it. And I said, is that a shooter, Chase? He said, it looks pretty good, 3-point. And with it being Dad's birthday, it's kind of getting towards the end of the trip. Chase's like, yeah, let's kill that buck. So we watched him for a few minutes. I was trying to figure out where they were on Onyx because we were kind of on a border. Like, I hunt a lot of borders, and I was not sure if that buck was on public right away. But then I kind of range-finded it, and you can use the line tool or the circle tool in Onyx and say he's 800 yards. Expand the circle tool out to 800 yards. It'll tell you what's all, you know, what you're looking at, kind of. It found out that buck's in the public, but very close to the fence. So, glass this buck up. We're going to head back down the cat trail, come down a little finger ridge, off the finger ridge in the bottom, come all the way back up, and get up on top of the basin and look right down into the basin right on him. So, I'm like, it's time to go. We have to go. We don't have much time. We only have about an hour at this point. We got to cover 1,000 yards through a burn. And we had a good approach. There was about 2/3 or a half, roughly, right in there of the of the stock where that basin we were exposed. So we had to be really careful when we were going down there because a lot of the does are what will get you. And so once we cleared the last doe, we were able to kind of scurry up the hill pretty quickly, but you had to be pretty quiet, and we were kicking deer out left and right going over to those deer. No bucks, but that we could see at least. And I was worried that those does were going to kick out those other deer. They were going to see him and kick out those other deer. Now we cross the creek. We get up onto the basically a small bench before we start climbing up, drop our packs, and I glass up on top of the ridge, kind of off the basin, and there's freaking deer standing on top of the basin. I'm like, oh, we busted them. So I'm like, all right, well, let's go and check out regardless. So we go up there. We get to the top, and I'm looking in this basin. There's not a deer in the basin. I had seen the last deer kind of crest the top of the skyline. It's about, I don't know, 30 minutes before dark. And I'm looking in the basin, and I'm like, I'm not seeing any deer. I'm like, where are these deer? And I'm belly crawling. Honestly, I belly crawled up to it. And I belly crawled another probably 5 yards in front of me, and those deer are tucked up tight in the basin right below us, 70 yards and closer. So that buck is feeding at 70 yards. And so I turn to Chase. I'm like, buck, come here. And I'm like, crawl, stay low. And he was using my gun at this point because I'd already shot a buck and had a little bit more range with it. And what we did when we got up into this basin is I glassed the far side of the basin and said, far side of the basin's, you know, 350. You've only got, you know, 6 to 8 inches of drop at 350. So just put it on top of his back. You'll be good all the way to the whole rim. Everywhere we could look, Chase could pretty much point and shoot. So that's one good thing to kind of, before you crest over to look into something, range the far hillside. If you do bust them and they run, that way you kind of know, you already pre-know where the range is. And so I got Chase set up, and I said, okay, wait, let me get the spotter. Because I had the spotter. I wanted to get it on phone scope really bad. And I get it on phone scope. Buck is facing, his butt is facing us and head feeding away, and he's about to turn left. So I get the phone scope up. I hit play. And I get about 20 seconds of video, and it's this memory files 2-4 whatever. I was so heartbroken. I'm like, no. Because I had told him, yeah, go ahead. And then I'm like, no. So I'm deleting photos. I'm deleting random apps on my phone. This buck's at 70 yards feeding. There's 8 does with him, and I'm trying to get storage on my phone. I never end up getting storage on my phone. I'm like, all right, whatever. I said, Chase, kill that buck. Deer turns broadside. Chase torches went off. Buck jumps, starts heading down to the left into the ravine. We reposition, scooch up. Chase takes another shot. Buck takes about 4 hops and dies. So buck down, dad's 50th birthday, right on Chase's first meal deer. So pack that deer out. And pack that buck out under the stars in Montana, and then meet up with my uncle and spend another day kind of getting everything in order, and then headed home. And I headed out to the Blacktail Woods after I got home and shot a buck on Sunday. Last day, last...
That was last, crazy. I didn't think you were going to get it done.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that on a different podcast. But, so that was a good week for me and the family. So now that you heard about my experience in Montana, bucks everywhere, great time, really enjoyed it. One of those places that I always want to go back. Let's talk about how to get to Montana. And I do have some questions, so we're gonna answer the questions first before we get into the numbers and the stupid paperwork stuff that you have to do. So I'm going to pull up all of our questions here and go over that. Booty, do you have any like questions off the top of your head that you're wondering that you think would somebody that wouldn't have much information know of when I go to apply, or how do I even apply, what to look at, X, Y, and Z?
Questions off the top of my head? No, I don't think so. Because, okay. I mean, if you think about it, if you're looking into Montana, probably the first place you're going to check is their website. The website has most... I mean, I'm just throwing you out there.
Did you check Idaho Fish and Game's website?
Yes, I did. Shut up.
Don't lie to me.
I did.
You did not.
I did too.
I'm talking about our Idaho trip last year.
I figured it out.
What'd you find out?
I'm pretty sure I actually had mine account set up before you do, but that's whatever.
Okay.
I think that's about all I have.
Yeah, but you had to go on their website to buy the tag, but that's about it.
I read their regs, yeah, but if I was going to hunt a new state,
lighted knocks legal in Idaho?
I didn't get that far. I don't think so. I think they're like old school Washington, so no.
Correct answer.
Because if I had to guess for anything, even for muzzleloader off the top of my head, I don't think you can use, what are they, 209 or 8 or whatever.
It's extremely primitive in Idaho.
Yeah, it's how Washington used to be.
It's like flintlock.
Yes.
So
cap's got to be exposed. It's got to have water to it, basically.
Yeah, so you're good on questions.
Anyway.
But I've got questions from Decker B3. We've chatted on Instagram a few times about fishing and all that. So what's your thoughts on a good respectable size buck? Or basically he's asking, he's like, what's a good respectable size buck for public land Montana muley? And I had talked to my buddy Aaron about it, which you'll hear from him on a couple podcasts later about spring bear. But he was telling me if you find a 135, 145 buck, that's a pretty average respectable size buck for public land in Montana.
So what's that looking at, like, points?
As far as what do you mean?
So what was Chase's...
scoring-wise?
So Chase's buck was a 3-point.
So his is probably not going to meet that.
Okay.
And that's about... You guys can look on my Instagram about the size of my buck. It's got about a 23-inch wide spread. It's a 4-point. The back tines aren't very big. One side's all, you know, one side is not as symmetrical because you lose points... Like, say you say one side's a 6-inch tine and one side's a 2-inch tine, you're going to lose 4 points there.
Okay.
Because it rewards symmetry and it rewards length. So, unless you go non-typical, then it don't really matter. But I'd say that buck's about 135, 140. Okay. That's about your higher than average, roughly. Chase's buck, he's got really big back tines. You saw that.
Yeah.
So he's going to score well on that, but he doesn't have the width. So his is probably 125-ish. Still a great buck, but about then. But look into the scoring options when you're wanting to do that. Watch videos and compare that and say, would you shoot this? Would you shoot that? Would you shoot this? Would you shoot that? When you're watching mule deer hunting videos, you'll get a kind of a good feel for what they look like and what to expect as far as score when you're doing that. Now, don't get me wrong. You don't have to shoot a 140 or 150 class buck. That's a big buck. That's a really nice buck. There's some guys that just want to go for the experience, and the experience is worth it, man. Like it was so much fun. So, from what Aaron has told me and my good guess, kind of the area we were at, I mean, we didn't see a ton of masher bucks. It's a private game. That's the issue in Montana, the private-public issue. There's a ton of animals on private, and you got to pay to play. But I'd say 140. That would be if I had to put a number on it, I'd say 140. But go with what you guys are comfortable with and go, like, set yourself a goal. It's like, I'm just going to shoot a buck. Go find a buck and shoot one. Or I'm going to wait and see what I see. Then that's go, like, for me, if I look at a deer and I'm like, that's a nice buck, I'm gonna shoot it. That's how I kind of gauge. Well, I did have a 4-point requirement in my head because I wanted to shoot a 4-point, and he had 4 points and I was happy, so I shot him. Like, I honestly didn't have, I shot this buck in 10 seconds. I didn't have time to score him. I didn't have time to judge him. I didn't even know he had eye guards, and I didn't know he was that wide. I just saw a side profile. That's the honest truth, because he was running, crossing in front of me. And go with what makes you happy. Whatever gives you that, it's a good buck. Mm-hmm. Shoot that buck. So that's what I recommend. But if I had to put a number to it, 140. Peter Salich, I'm assuming that's how you say your last name. We've got 2 questions from him. Did you e-scout only before your first hunt? Absolutely. 100% e-scouting. I know Booty can attest to it. I dive balls deep into the e-scouting. Like, stuff you shouldn't be looking at. Like, I don't know. I just get really in-depth on the e-scouting, access points, how to get away from people, forums. Look at forums. Watch YouTube videos. Watch Instagram. See what you can dig up. Do your research. And this, where I went, was 100% e-scouting. As far as from finding camping spots or... looking at access, looking at roads. You know, a road might show up on Onyx, but look at it on Google Earth. See if that's actually really a road, because there are some in Onyx that are old roads, but not drivable anymore. Like the one we were on, was a road technically on Onyx, but was not a road on Google Earth. So that's kind of why the reason I picked it. And you can look at Burns, Beetle Kill, all of that. Deep dive in the e-scouting, use multiple different things, multiple different sources of scouting, and make a plan. How many points to draw non-res combo? So for 100% success, as far as last year is concerned, if you had 3 points, or no, if you had 2 points, I believe it was 100% success. So that would mean that you put in this year, did not get drawn, put in next year, and you'd get the points. Because if you bought your preference point this year, didn't get drawn, then you go into the next year with a preference point, you buy another one, you have 2 points, you're going to get a tag. That is what the draw results showed me on the Montana Fish and Wildlife site. I'm not just making this up. You can find this information on the Montana Fish and Wildlife site. So, and they have statistics. It's about a 75% success rate. Now, I'm going to preface with that. I think it's going to be less next year. There's a lot of changes that happened from last year to this year. Let's talk about Eastern Oregon. They are not over the counter anymore for deer. It's all draw. It's going to be like that for elk next year. Let's talk about Idaho. Idaho is sold out right now. No deer decks. Well, I know there's no elk decks. Very few deer decks, if any. My gut feeling is it's going to put some pressure on Montana. So don't take the 75% to heart. You know, if you go in, so preference points work top to bottom. If you have the top amount of preference points, you're going to get a tag. And generally it's 1 to 2 preference points is where you're going to get close to guaranteed, around the 70-80% range. If you go in with 0 points, you don't want to buy the 50% option or the $50 option. You're going to be about a 60% because there's still going to be tags left. It's just going to be kind of a random deal. So hopefully that answers your question, Peter. Lost Valley, which you guys are going to hear from him next week. It's Spencer Burdick, and he says, what's your choice of optics for Montana? I only got one pair, so I kind of don't have a choice, but Razor HD 10x42s. Put them on a tripod, sit your butt on the ground, and glass deer up. You need to be patient. You need to glass deer up. Well, because if you don't glass them, you ain't going to shoot them. But need to be patient. Sit there. Deer are going to move left and right and do deer things. And you need to be in the position to be able to spot them and make a move. So I've got Razor HDs, 10x42s. I find a deer. We're going to pull out the Razor HD spotting scope and put the phone scope on them and find some deer. I really recommend the phone scope because then you can have your phone size screen on your scope. You're not having to close one eye. And you can look at deer. All right, so the next question, I hope that answers your question, Peter. We're going to dive into Lost Valley Traditions question. That's Spencer Burdick. He's going to be on the podcast next week. He says, what's your optics of choice for Montana? What I've got is a Razor HD 10x42. I really like the 10x42s because I can feel like I have a wider field of view because I don't have it so far magnified, and I can spot deer really well. And then pull out the spotting scope and judge the animal. Now, if you're going to go to a part of Montana where it is open and you need to, and you can, I don't want to say you need to, but you have the ability to see really far away, a spotting scope is going to really help you judge the animal, whether you're going to invest the time going after them or not. So I'd recommend it. That'd just be my recommendation because where we were, you can see a very long ways away. And when we would look at deer, you'd say, there's a buck. He looks like a good buck, but let's take a look at him. And you might be spotting these deer at 800,000 yards. I mean, they could be very close. All of our shots were under 100, but finding the deer, making the move, and putting yourself in the position is a different story. So I'd recommend a spotting scope. You don't necessarily need to have one. You can always just take the time to go over there and look at that buck. I don't personally have one. I had to borrow one from my buddy Aaron, so shout out to you, Big Dog. I appreciate that. But it's definitely super helpful. Our next question comes from my wife, JC. She says, why did you pick to hunt Montana? The reason I picked Montana is, you know, there's kind of the general consensus of like, there's a lot of deer in Montana and good bucks. Montana has a rifle season for mule deer that goes into November. Kind of doesn't really interfere with our Washington blacktail season other than late buck. We still cut our season short to come back to hunt late buck. So I might have to get unmarried from late buck, to be quite honest with you. But there's plenty of deer. It's a great state to hunt, and I highly recommend it. And I'm sure there's other western states that are just like it. I had fun. It's like a relaxing hunt. Like, you don't have to be concerned about, like, I don't know if I'm going to fill my tag. We had talked about that. It was fun. We're going to take the family over and have a good time with that. And then Downtown Brown 0610 has a question, and it says, what was your prior experience with Montana, or did you just research it and wing it? I'm all about winging it, brother. And I was talking to my coworker today about it, too, and he's like, well, how do you even know where to go? You just pick a spot. You know, you can do some research and narrow down some information. Look at harvest stats, look at hunting pressure, look at forms, do YouTube research, because there is some info out there. But what we did is I looked at harvest numbers and kind of looked at, like, there's obviously a lot of deer there because there's a lot of deer getting shot. So that's where we kind of went, and it turned out really well. Now, am I going to change spots next year? I just might. Just the only reason I change spots is to go explore.
Yeah.
Because what we were talking about earlier is, who knows how long this stuff's going to stay around. That is a sad thing for me to say.
I mean, how long?
Even you'd be able to afford it?
Being able to afford it, yeah. Because that's the thing, is like, everybody's raising their prices. Mm-hmm. And they're only going to, once they get high, they stay high.
And Senate bill in Montana, 143, was trying to cut the non-resident quotas way down. So I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm kind of concerned, but I'd like to go explore. You know, we're not going back to Idaho. I shot a bull in Idaho. People are like, well, why aren't you going back? Well, I want to go check it out. I want to go somewhere else.
Well, one, they also sold out in December.
We can still get a tag. I'm not worried about that.
I understand.
Yeah. But we wanted to go explore. But they also did sell out in December. So if we wanted to go to Idaho, we'd be in a hard spot right now. And it was a fiasco for the Idaho draw. So I like to explore, so I kind of pick different states to go experience and travel, and maybe when I get done with all that, we'll go revisit places that were the best and start having some tradition. You know, we always go over to this spot, we set up camp here. I get that. I like that, but I also like to go check out new areas, and I like the challenge of trying to find a new spot, figure it out, and go do that. So that's all of the questions that we have for that were submitted. So if you guys want me to answer your questions the best that I can, just respond to our Instagram story, because that's where we do it. You can also message me with your questions and do all of that. And now we're going to go through the application process, you know, prices, quotas, things to look out for, things to consider in the process. Again, if you got any questions, Booty, feel free to ask them and interrupt me so that I can clarify it, because I've basically read the whole website on Montana and went over all of that. So I might skip over a few things. So I want you to clarify that. So applications are open now in Montana. They opened up on March 1st for big game. And what I'm talking about is like deer and elk combos. So deer and elk combos open March 1. The application deadline for deer and elk combos is April 1st. So we need to have an application in by April 1st, and that's why this podcast is getting fast-tracked to the front of the line. So I'm going to put this out next week, which will be, I don't know, 7 days from now, which is March 11th. Well, it won't be actually 7 days from now, but early March. So you guys can listen to this and be like, oh, maybe I want to go to Montana. And you can reuse this as a resource for you to go to Montana. Speaking on deadlines, if you're going to go for moose, goat, or sheep, the premium tags in Montana, that deadline is May 1st. Elk and deer B licenses, as well as antelope, those are due June 1st. So you have to have your apps in by that date, or you're not going to be in that draw. Now, when it comes to tag allocations, What that means is there's only a certain amount of tags for these deer and elk combos. So a big game combo, what a big game combo is a deer and elk license, as well as all of your other licensure to make you good to go. And archery, you do have to buy an additional permit for if you're going to hunt archery. So, but a big game combo is deer and elk tag and all of the conservation licenses below that. There are 17,000 of those for non-residents. That costs $1,052. Now, when you apply for that, you can spend an extra $50 and buy a preference point. That is up to you if you want to. Elk combos are also $17,000. I believe, do not quote me on this, do your research on the website. The elk combos and the big game combos are together in the $17,000 quota. Now, there is a, if you don't want a deer tag, then you can apply for the elk combo as well. That is $888. Same thing applies with the preference point. You pay $50 and you apply. What that means is you can apply with 0 points or you can apply with 1 point. They sold out last year and a couple years before that. There were a lot of people that got drawn with 0 points. All of this information is on the website as well. You can see how many people exactly. I think it was 60% of the people that applied for big game combos that had 0 points got drawn. So you have about a 60% chance without any points and without spending that extra $50. There's a deer combo only, and there's only 4,600 of those. That is $614 for you to apply for non-residents. There are some other licenses. Options for you to get a combo, landowner licenses, but you can only hunt on their land and they have to have more than 640 acres. So that is like a landowner sponsored license. So say if Booty owned 640 acres in Montana, he could sponsor a license. I don't know how many, but that's just the minimum acreage for eligibility to have a non-resident sponsored license. And you can do a come home or come to hunt where you have a family member in Montana and you want to go hunt with them. And there's a limited amount of those. They are at a very reduced price. They're roughly about half. They're around the $500 range for a big game combo. I think it's $542. But that means you have a grandparent, parent, sibling, step sibling, spouse, X, Y, and Z, the first lineage of family. You're going to go hunt with them and you can hunt with them. And they've had to have taken a Montana education course and have a Montana license to apply. And those are first-come, first-serve licenses. Now, you want to apply for a party. Me and Booty want to go to Montana. Now, when we apply for our application, it's all done online. And if we apply as a party, I have to apply first. I apply first. I write down Booty's name, which we can't legally say his first name. write down his name and say he's going to be in my party. I apply, I get an email with my party number, I give that to Booty. Booty goes to apply, says he's in a party, puts the party number in, and applies. Now, if everybody's going to apply in the party, everybody obviously is going to apply in the party, but preference point or not preference point, they all have to be the same, otherwise you're going to get kicked out of the party, and I don't know if you get disqualified from the draw or not, but you're not going to be in that party. If, say, I bought a preference point and Booty did not buy a preference point, then he's going to be kicked out of the party. Now, you can have up to 5 people in a party when you apply. So, now, as far as that is just for your general tag. Usually you have 2 weeks after you apply, you'll find out if you got your general license, and then you have special permits you can draw. And it's similar to, for me, as similar as the Oregon, where you have like first choice, second choice, third choice. First choice needs to be the permit that you mainly want. Second choice, the only reason you should put a second choice and the only time you should expect to draw a second choice is if those tags are 100% draw odds. Now what that means is if there's 500 tags and 300 people apply for them, you'll draw that second choice. Now, if it's a tag where you have 500 tags and 1,000 people apply for them, you should not put that on as your second choice because you're probably not going to draw it. But you never know. You never know what's going to go have on. The one thing is you have to have a valid email address, so you have to get on there and do that. And thing to take into consideration when you are applying for these special permits is non-residents only get up to 10% of the tag. That's not guaranteed. You can only get up to 10%. After that, no more non-residents will get drawn. So that's one thing to take into consideration when you're looking at the draws that you want to put in. And to kind of go a little bit farther in the draws, they are on a preference point system. So I explained that a little bit earlier, but let's do it one more time. The applicants with the most amount of points are going to be first in line to get those tags. So I know in the big game, in the general draws, if you have 3 point 100% success, you're going to get a tag no matter what because you have 3 points. There's really not really many people that have 3 points that I could see when I was looking at this stuff online. So they'll go from 3 points, then they'll go to 2 points. Anybody that has 2 points will get tags. And if there's tags left over, they'll go to 1 point. If there's tags left over, they'll go to 0 points. And if there's not enough tags for the amount of applicants, then they go to a random draw. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my best understanding on that. Are you good with everything? Do you understand what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the process. You'll have to create an online profile on MyFWP, and you'll get an ALS number, which is like your ID number. And if you've ever bought anything in Montana, because I had bought a fishing license. I went there for my birthday. We did did some shed hunting, just hanging out in the cabin in Montana. I had bought a fishing license, so I already had an MLS number. Now, this is one thing you guys should not try to apply for last second, because my information was slightly off when I went to apply, so I could not like retrieve my ALS number because it was not allowing me to do it correctly. I had to call Fish and Wildlife. So I would recommend doing this with a couple days during the week before the deadline so that if you do have any issues like that, you can get them sorted out. My good buddy Aaron lost out on an opportunity to put in for a spring bear because we were doing it last minute. He had applied for Oregon back in the day, created a new profile. It locked him out because it had two Aarons with the same social security number, all this stuff. They thought it was a fake account. He couldn't apply. So make sure you do this during the week when you're able to call Fish and Wildlife and if you have any issues. But then that ALS number will not change in the future. You can always look it up and then apply again. I don't know what ALS number stands for, but it's very important to know when you're applying for Montana. So that concludes our Montana segment. And I appreciate you guys. We are going to try and release these on Tuesdays. I think that's a good day. It gives me some time to edit. And we got a couple episodes in the bank. So this one's going to fast track, though. Just do it on timing because we want to get you guys this information so you can listen to it and get in on the draw if you guys want to get in on the draw. My opinion on it is I think there's going to be a lot more people applying due to the other states' decisions. We're going to see that in the future. And a lot of states are kind of putting some legislation forward that may affect us. So try and get involved with that. Try and do as much research as you can. I've been following Senate Bill 143. There's some things that have changed on it, and I don't want to speak about it yet because I'm not 100%. But I don't think the reduction of non-resident tags has passed, but they amended it. There's a new House bill, I believe it's 505, that's coming about now. So check them out. Even as non-residents, we can call and voice our opinions on it and send emails because at the end of the day, if you don't, they're just going to send these things through. So appreciate you guys. Hit us up on the socials, on Instagram, Facebook. Follow our YouTube channel. We don't have a ton on there, but I'm looking to expand that. Eventually, I'll get a really nice camera, video camera. I have a DSLR, but for videoing, I'm not too much of a fan of it. I know everybody else is doing it, but I'm a handy cam or camcorder guy. Appreciate you guys, and we'll see you next week.